This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Trust. Over the last 10 years, our trust with digital platforms have been rocky. From the birth of social media with the promise of keeping family and friends closer, that eventually drove us apart with political agenda. In this episode, we take a look into how, against the backdrop of fake news, digital disruption, and questions over brand safety, where consumers have more choice than ever, it's companies that focuses on credibility and reliability that will rise to the top. The search for trust in the digital economy as we move into the new decade. Joining me today in our part three of our decade in review is where we search for trust, is James Lyne, the Chief Strategy Officer for Consider iProspect. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me today. So I'm James Lyne. I'm Chief Strategy Officer for Consider iProspect. Consider iProspect is under Dentsu Aegis Network in Malaysia and essentially handles all of the digital services operations for Dentsu locally. I've been in Malaysia for about 6 years now. We joined Dentsu as a company in 2016. Mm-hmm. So me, myself, I focus a lot on how can we better our partner, our clients moving into the next sort of 5 years of transformation. What does that look like? And how do we make sure that we're sort of there at the door to greet our clients when they come across these hurdles that we see coming?
All right. And, and iProspect interviewed leaders and influencers from around the world for your fourth annual white paper, the 2019 Future Focus Searching for Trust. And you've discovered some interesting insights into the interconnectedness of trust and business growth in a digital economy. So, James, like, you know, digital economy has just brought on so many more new opportunities and developments and innovations. If we rewind back the clock to January 2010, was there any indication that we would get to this point where data is now, you know, the currency of the digital economy, the oil of the future?
Yeah, no, really, really good question. I think, yes, there were indicators, but I don't think people understood just quite how far it would go. Mm. And I think, you know, a really interesting point is that last year, data surpassed oil in terms of value as a commodity. So that really puts it in perspective. I don't think that people would have necessarily seen that coming then. And I think the key drivers that underpinned that were sort of the adoption of digital services. So the global players that you and I know, Facebook, Google, et cetera. And also the adoption of mobile phones. So the role that the smartphone plays in our day-to-day lives, how many times we use it a day, how much time we spend on social media. So that in itself created the ecosystem with which businesses could then capitalize on using data to grow.
It's the speed of, you know, how fast we've evolved over the last 9 years, 10 years. That's the bit that I guess kind of scares people a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think it's, you know, I think that everything, all of this transformation is happening very quickly. Companies have to move fast, but that's also driven by consumers too. Mm. So consumers will always require more from their businesses. You know, if you are able to order something on a chat app like WhatsApp, you know, your expectation will next ask will be, well, how can I improve the delivery or how can you make this easier for me? So from a business perspective, it can be quite daunting. From a consumer perspective, that I think is ultimately the driver. It's the response.
Mm. Where is this hunger coming from? Like the consumers wanting more, and I get it because we all are, you know, culprits of this. Like, you know, we get the new device and then we immediately start imagining about, you know, new opportunities. But if we look back when, you know, smartphone revolution, the iPhone came about, we never envisioned that, you know, we would now have delivery services for food and, you know, past midnight we would, you know, order a ride-hailing service using just a mobile app and stuff. But now we seem to be a lot more savvy with or a lot more demanding. Where's this hunger, do you think, you know, comes from?
Yeah, I think that ultimately the driver is convenience. And once something becomes accessible, it almost becomes the norm. And so the expectation is, well, how can I make this more convenient? Because there are always improvements that can be made. So for me, on the consumer side, the underlying driver is convenience. How do we, you know, as a business, how do we interact better with consumers, make the experience easier for them to interact with us? Mm.
And what about the rise of attention economy? In your report, some stats here that really scared me out. You know, 62% of people from 23 biggest economies admit that they're constantly looking at their screens. I'm definitely one of them. Apple declares that iPhone owners unlock their phones 80 times a day on average, and the time spent on social media now exceeds 2 hours per day. Is there more added pressure now from brands to capture some of this time spent on our screens?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's definitely a lot more pressure. There's also a lot more opportunity for brands. There's also more pressure on the communications of it. So the transparency goes both ways. Brands can communicate directly with consumers. They can unlock new opportunities. They can have a sort of one-to-one conversation in many circumstances. But equally, they have to be on point. So their communications have to really reflect their brand values. And if it's too sales-oriented or it's too scripted, consumers can know this too. So I think there's a balance to be struck. But ultimately, I think the underlying driver is still the convenience part, and then the opportunities to come.
Is there too much noise happening?
Too much, yeah. Well, there's a huge amount. Mm. I think often what we focus on and do is to help our clients navigate through what makes sense for them in a sort of sea of different platforms, different opportunities, different ways of engaging customers. And ultimately, it's about finding the way that is most true to your brand, because that's the best way to succeed in the long run. I think the noise will continue to be there. I think consumers are also a bit more deaf to it now. Mm. You know, you mentioned how much time everyone spends on social media. So the volume in terms of the amount of ads that we see every day, I think that perhaps the attention span, obviously, for each of these ads decreases. So there's an increasing need for brands to also innovate and be creative about the ways that they're using the platforms available to them.
And you're right. Consumers are now a little bit deaf when it comes to marketing that you see on social media, which also presents a different risk. But and this probably may be a dumb question, but why is trust an important aspect for brands today? And it's like a must top priority as we move into a new decade.
Yeah, I think trust is fundamental to be able to succeed as a business that wants to engage us and sell products or services to consumers. Ultimately, I think the same principles that build trust with consumers apply today as they did 50, 100 years ago. So where we looked at this, we approached three different pillars within trust. So credibility, relevance, and reliability as sort of underpinning how to build trust as a brand or as a business with directly with customers. I think the importance of it is essentially that now that there's the opportunity to engage one-on-one, there's also the responsibility to do so in a way that doesn't damage your brand equity and doesn't create that lasting negative impression from either something that's too repetitive, too sales-oriented, or something that is, where a customer can reach out to you and ask a question immediately and then you take so many weeks to get back to them. So, again, a balance between the two, but equally opportunities on both sides for businesses and for customers.
Why do you think we struggle with the idea of building trust in a digital world?
I think the idea of trust, and especially relevant to the digital world, that it's going to take time for the two to mold together, because I think people are a lot more savvy now. So usage of mobile phones, the internet, there are a lot of scams out there. There are a lot of opportunities for you to either lose money or lose data or these other things. So there's almost this sort of additional wall between brands and consumers, in spite of it being easier for us to communicate. I think in order for brands to really get through to their consumers and build that trust, it comes back to these three pillars. So for credibility, it's ultimately authenticity, as being real in the communication. So how can we communicate our brand values honestly and truly? And consumers, especially millennials, can really feel this when they're communicating with a brand. Relevance is about the convenience that we talked about earlier. So giving consumers what they want, where and when they want it. And being there when, in a reactive sense, the same way. And then reliability, I think, is about consistency in the communications. So all of it is possible. The tools are there. It's just a question of joining the dots together and figuring out the right way of approaching it for your individual business.
And moving along, we all know that the fourth industrial revolution is here. The digital economy is set to change the world as well. What does the world look like for Malaysian businesses as we step into, you know, IR 4.0?
Yeah, I think, I think it looks bright. Quite scary at the same time, but but equally bright. I think, you know, something that's interesting about the Malaysian landscape is, one is the consumer behavior, but also the level of adoption. So you see huge variances. Some companies that haven't even touched on the digital economy yet, and there's a huge opportunity for them to innovate quickly and to capitalize on all of these new opportunities for them. And equally, other companies that are really pushing the envelope in terms of global best practice and innovation that solely survive within the digital economy. So that's really interesting. On the consumer side, we see Malaysian consumers having adopted a lot of the more modern technologies in the last, say, 5 to 7 years. And with that comes the same expectations. So I see this continuing. So increasing prevalence of one-to-one chats with consumers, businesses being available on all platforms when a consumer wants to engage, the business is there to respond. So for Malaysia specifically, I think the focus will be ultimately on the availability of businesses to respond within a quick manner and engage on a one-to-one basis. But equally on the business side, I think there's a huge opportunity for innovation, for incubation of technology, for skills development too, which I think circles back to it. Obviously, skills is both a risk but also an opportunity for businesses to invest.
Now, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about what's at risk for Malaysian businesses that keep being followers and not really creators. BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back, and this is part 3 of our Tech Talks Decade in Review. And today we're taking a look at trust, the search for trust, to be specific. How digital platforms have come about and how it has shaped us the way we trust, believe and preach in the online world. My guest is James Lyne from Consider iProspect, and early on we spoke about trends like IoT and Industry 4.0 and how it will kind of shape us. James, some would argue that Malaysian businesses are generally followers of trends. What's at risk for those who don't embrace things like Industry 4.0 and just keep waiting for trends to happen?
I think ultimately the risk would be a skills gap, but I also don't buy into the idea that Malaysia necessarily follows other developed markets. I think there are many examples of where Malaysian businesses are leading global practice innovators, and the same level of global attention may not be there, but that doesn't mean that the innovation is not happening. I think ultimately it will come down to a balance. We'll have, you know, some areas in which Malaysia really innovates and pushes the envelope, some areas where other markets are focused more specifically on different industries or verticals, and it makes more sense for Malaysian businesses to look abroad for that technology or those skills. But again, a balance. Yeah.
So let's talk about digital disruption. The classic example that everyone, I guess, is very familiar with is, you know, Grab, and when it came along, and which completely disrupted the taxi industry here in Malaysia. Yeah. And, you know, we've seen similar examples like the Airbnbs for the hotel industry, Uber for, you know, the same kind of ride hailing around the world. Is this what the future looks like? You know, are we all just have to be ready to be disrupted by, you know, a unicorn startup?
Yeah, I think so definitely everyone has, is, and will continue to be disrupted, you know, both in business and as consumers as well. I think that equally, I think competition is good. So I think there needs to be a balance too. And, you know, I don't think that these unicorn startups are necessarily immune from competition. Competition is good for consumers. It's good for employees. So it's good for the general market. So long as there's sort of a good amount of competition that's encouraged on a local basis, I think the opportunities are there for businesses to capitalize. Mm.
And when you see the sustainability of some of these startups that come in were to disrupt traditional businesses that have been around for, you know, decades long, is there a risk that, you know, some of these new startups that we see and, you know, provide us the, you know, the accessibility, the convenience, may not be sustainable for the long-term future? The business model itself itself will probably have to change.
Definitely. I see, you know, and we read about a lot of companies as well that are now listing, making large quarterly losses. And if you look back to sort of the mid to late 90s, it was a similar trend with internet companies then as well. And I think that this is a natural progression of the market, that ultimately several of these companies will, I think will struggle and will have to innovate or be consolidated into larger players that appear in the market. But definitely the sustainability is a big question. Mm.
And if the customer experience, I guess, is central to a digital transformation and digital future, right? And data is key to understanding the customer experience, then I'm guessing that data just really just sits at the heart of this topic. And as you mentioned, data is the all of the future, but yet there's so many issues of sensitivity around data and, you know, data collection, data processing, data analytics, and then using artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
There's a lot of worry here, but yet it's the crown jewel.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. I think the role that data continues to play will be central, but I think ultimately things will shift, and that will be driven by consumer demand. So in the future, right now, obviously, the services that we use, we're paying for them with data. Mm. And we don't necessarily value data as much as the companies that are essentially buying it from us. But in time, I think we will, as it becomes clearer how the data is being used, what the impact of that is. And as that sentiment starts to change, businesses will need to adapt to that too. And, you know, you mentioned AI. I think eventually AI will be used to protect consumer data, to companies offering services, insulating you or providing you privacy in the digital age. Mm.
Which I want to talk about AI, you know, because it's the rise of AI is unstoppable. But while it's lauded in business operations, it's saved, you know, it's created automation in many different sectors and verticals of a business. Yet it's got a bad rap among, you know, the public consumers. You know, I guess probably we watch too much of Hollywood, you know, sci-fi movies and so on and so forth. But is there really a future where trust and transparency will be associated with the word artificial intelligence?
That's a good question. The simple answer is, I don't think so on the same level as it is with human-to-human interaction. I think that ultimately there's something in talking to another person, that there's a level of understanding and emotional connection that businesses make with customers, that people make with people. That being said, a lot of processes in between those interactions can be automated. Mm. So a lot of things that we interact to do with each other doesn't require a connection. And we see that happening already, paying for things, buying things, ordering things, asking for updates on things. So a lot of automation can be provided by AI, but ultimately that human element, I think, will ultimately be the key driver of trust and communication.
And what do we get wrong with artificial intelligence? Like, you know, besides the fact that we think AI is, you know, the Skynets and the Matrix, you know, is the artificial general intelligence, which, you know, many experts say we're miles away from it. But just AI itself, with the rise of automation, there is that risk of, you know, more jobs will be lost, you know, with the Industrial Revolution 4.0. What are we actually getting wrong or not understanding AI enough, that we're actually, you know, putting this fear when there's real big business benefit here?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the benefits outweigh the potential risks. So historically, all of the previous industrial revolutions have created more opportunity, more growth than they've replaced. A good example, I think, that's relevant to you as well, is that, you know, there used to be a full-time job for someone to read out the newspapers in factories, so that everyone was entertained while they were working. And obviously, this was then displaced by the radio. Mm. And from there, the smartphone displaced the radio. So equally, that role, that the man who had that skill set, that skill set is just as in demand, if not more, in the age of the radio than it was before. So in an age where AI automates everything, customer service becomes even more important because of the human touch. So equally, there will be roles that need to be replaced or need to be changed, but there are also opportunities for people in those roles to then to take their skills and apply them to the new economy.
It's looking at AI from one side of the coin and not looking at the benefit of the other.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Obviously, there are other risks too, but purely from a from an automation of jobs perspective, I think that the opportunities do outweigh the risks.
And so what should companies then, I guess, you know, or brands do to navigate this new digital world, build a trusted, truthful and authentic relationship with their customers as we move into, you know, 2020 onwards?
Yeah, absolutely. I think ultimately it comes down to defining your brand values. So from a, I'm speaking from a marketing perspective, but if you're true to your brand and you're honest in your intention, and that intention flows through everything that you do as a company. So if you're marketing, are you trying to just sell me one product? Because consumers can feel that, right? They can sense that. Whereas if there's an ongoing effort for brands to sort of engage in their consumers on a long-term engagement, I think there's a much greater opportunity for them. I think another element to it is also sort of efforts outside of the communication with customers. So CSR, ethical concerns, brands that really engage with these and own these areas are often really well rewarded by consumers too. So I think ultimately it comes down to the three pillars, which we've talked about. The execution obviously varies a lot between different companies.
And James, before we leave, paint us a future of what you hope to see as we step into the new decade. What color palette are you going to be using? Because I'm just, you know, orange with probably splats of red. Paint us the future here.
I think, if you're orange with spats of red, I think I'll probably be, say, a light green.
Very optimistic.
A bit more optimistic. I agree there will definitely be orange and red elements of it, but equally, you know, consumers drive demand, and ultimately that will be the opportunity for the businesses to capitalize on. So personally, I see the future as private. I think the consumers will eventually be able to command that kind of willpower. This is at the business level. I believe that's the case.
James, with you, I feel excited to step into the new decade.
Oh, thank you, sir. I really appreciate that.
Awesome. Thank you.
And to you.
And that was James Lyne, the Chief Strategy Officer for Consider iProspect, in our third episode for Decade in Review. Next week is our final episode that looks into connectivity and how interconnected we've been in the last 10 years and the challenges we faced along the way. My name is Jeff Zandu, and if you missed any parts of this conversation or any Decade in Review special, you can download the podcast now by searching for Decade in Review on the BFM app. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.